40 years ago, on April 25th, 1967, Colorado brought forth to this nation a new law dedicated to the proposition that all men are no longer created equal. Now we are engaged in a great cultural war, testing whether this nation, which routinely destroys the lives of innocent pre-born babies, can long endure. On April 25th, please join Colorado Right to Life to commemorate the millions of lives killed by abortion, because our state passed the first law in America allowing children to be killed for the crimes of their fathers. Noted speaker Dr. Alan Keyes will give the keynote address about our God-given rights and why they are far superior to any law written by man. Join us at 1:30 at the state capitol on April 25th to prayerfully put an end to the bloodshed. Stand with Dr. Keyes and Colorado Right to Life as we work to reestablish legal protection for all human life, from fertilization through natural death. For more information, call Colorado Right to Life at 303-753-9394. That's 303-753-9394.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Today we will continue our summary of the partial birth abortion ban as upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court. Ministries around the country, pro-life ministries, Christian ministries, are greeting the news of the ruling with celebration. I have here a press release from Focus on the Family. Focus applauds the High Court's Stand for Life. Stand for Life. We have on Salem Radio Network, Hugh Hewitt, saying that this decision was an answer to prayer. An answer to prayer. National Right to Life applauds the ruling. And so this ban, if you tuned in yesterday, we will just give a two-minute summary where we're up to. This ruling, Gonzalez versus Carhart, at Section 4, Part A, our pro-life justices, John Roberts, Antonin Scalia, Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, along with Anthony Kennedy, they're the majority. These are all men that were nominated to the U.S. Supreme Court by our pro-life Republican presidents, Ronald Reagan, George Bush, George W. Bush. They wrote this at Section 40, Part A. Abortionists, since they're striking down the partial birth abortion technique, abortionists may find different and less shocking methods to abort the fetus in the second trimester, thereby accommodating the legislative demand. See what they're saying? That when you look at a partial birth abortion, it looks sort of heinous. Why does it look bad? Most abortions are done inside the womb in the dark. That's where criminals like to do their work, in the dark. The Bible says that God is light, and light exposes the darkness. And when people's deeds are brought into the light, then everybody sees how evil they are. But the womb, like the center of the earth, you know, the Bible uses an expression for the mother's womb as in the depths of the earth. It's the unknown. It's dark. And so typically an abortionist does his crime in the dark where no one can see it. Partial birth abortion, for all the wickedness of all abortion, the murder of unborn children, at least partial birth abortion, the crime was done in the light of day so that people could see a baby's being killed. So is this the High Court standing for life when they say at Section 4, Part A, abortionist may find different and less shocking methods to abort the fetus in the second trimester? Is that standing for life? Or is that a merely regulatory ruling the way a government might regulate dialysis? That's what the court says. They say in this ruling that this is just like regulating any other medical procedure. There's no difference. We're doing this under the Commerce Clause. And then in Section 3C, Part 1, we have Roberts, Scalia, Thomas, and Alito ruling, part of their ruling, that the abortionist can remove a small portion, such as an arm or leg of a still living fetus, first pulled outside of the mother, as far as up to the navel, the belly button, and that is not prohibited. How's that for standing up for life? How's that for an answer to prayer? The partial birth abortion ban says that, well, there's a technique where the abortionist pulls the baby, a late-term baby, out of the birth canal all the way up to the neck and then kills the baby. So here's what we're going to do. Congress passed a law because people don't like the way that looks. So Congress passed a law that says you can't pull the baby out past the navel. So the abortionist could pull out the baby's feet, his ankles, his legs, up to the knees, the thighs, the hips, the torso, all the way up to the umbilical cord. And then he has to kill him. And literally, they talk about ripping off the baby's arms and legs. And that it could take 10 or 15 passes with the abortionist grabbing a part of the baby and ripping it off. Whereas, relatively speaking, partial birth abortion was one of the quickest and most painless ways of killing an unborn baby. So now let's continue. Let's continue with this analysis. Let's see. We'll be on page 8 of the 40-page ruling, section 1, part A, and I'm quoting verbatim from the justices. Another doctor, another abortionist, for example, squeezes the skull after it has been pierced so that enough brain tissue exudes to allow the head to pass through the cervix. Still other physicians reach into the cervix with their forceps and crush the fetus skull. Others continue to pull the fetus out of the woman until it disarticulates at the neck, in effect decapitating it. These doctors then grasp the head with the forceps, crush it, and remove it. So they're talking about how to do a D&E or a D&E intact, where the baby comes out in one piece, or a typical D&E, where the baby is ripped to pieces. And so this is the kind of language, that quote I just gave you, that flows through the entire ruling. The entire ruling. And they don't once say any of this is wrong. This is all fine. But you might want to find a different way to kill the baby. And if you want to take it out partway, like halfway, and rip it to pieces, that's okay. That complies with our regulation. Page 9, Section 1, Part A. Yet one doctor would not allow delivery of a live fetus because the justices ask, well, what if the baby comes out and he's going to come out and he's going to be alive? And they say the doctor would not allow delivery of a live fetus because the objective of his procedure is to perform an abortion, not a birth. Thus, the doctor answered in the affirmative, he said yes, when asked whether he would hold the fetus head on the internal side of the cervix in order to collapse the skull and kill the fetus before it is born. Do you get that? The baby might come all the way out unintentionally. And so they asked the abortionist, well, what would you do? What would you do in that case? And he said, well, I would hold the baby's head just inside and crush the skull or smother it to death or whatever I got to do to kill the baby. Okay, let's see. Let's continue. This is good reading, right? This is what you call an answer to prayer. National Right to Life applauds this ruling. Hugh Hewitt on Salem Radio Network says it's an answer to prayer. Another doctor testified he crushes a fetus skull not only to reduce its size, but also to ensure the fetus is dead before it is removed. For the abortionist staff, to have to deal with a fetus that has, quote, some viability to it, some movement of limbs, according to this doctor, is always a difficult situation. So they're saying that when the abortionist, when the nurses and the staff see the baby moving, that's difficult for them. So they like to kill it as soon as possible. So partial birth abortion then, which was one of the quickest ways to kill the baby, was also the most difficult to witness, not only for the staff, but for the pro-life community and the general public. We are celebrating. We don't have to think about these babies being slaughtered in the light of day. Now they're going to be slaughtered in the darkness of the womb where nobody could see the crime taking place. That's a problem we've had for 40 years. That how do you speak for a victim that has no mouth? Nobody could hear the baby because the baby's in the womb. Nobody could see the crime because it takes place in the darkness of the womb. So we want pictures to show the baby being killed and the baby living in the womb. So we have partial birth abortion, and we celebrate because the U.S. Supreme Court, our Republican conservative, supposedly pro-life judges, say, hey, you guys better find a different way to kill these babies because people don't like looking at it. That's what they said. That's what this ruling is. This is the high court standing for life. Dr. James Dobson, this is the high court standing for life. This ban has no authority to save a single child's life. But what it does is unwittingly push the crime of late-term abortion back into the darkness of the womb where it lurks out of the public consciousness. So let me continue reading from the ruling. Page 9. It's a 40-page ruling. I was sick for 2 days reading it. Page 9, Section 1, Part A. Doctors also may abort a fetus through medical induction. Let's see, D&E, they give some statistics, what percentage of abortions happen in the first trimester, the second trimester. Let's see, let's go to page 10, Section 1, Part B. Congress found, among other things, that moral, medical, and ethical consensus exist that the practice of performing a partial birth abortion is a gruesome and inhumane procedure that is never medically necessary and should be prohibited. Second, and more relevant here, the Act's language differs from that of the Nebraska statute that we struck down in the year 2000 in their decision called Stenberg. Now, do you get that? They're saying, well, Congress passed the law, and they said that there's moral consensus that partial birth abortion is gruesome and inhumane. So we have our justices on the Supreme Court, right? The ones that we worked a quarter of a century to get on the court, 25 years with Reagan, Bush, and George W. Bush. And so those justices say, well, they gave a second finding. They found that it was morally gruesome. But more relevant here, the Act's language differs from the partial birth ban we struck down 7 years ago. And so then they quote how, it's so interesting, they quote how the language differs. And let me skip ahead a few pages. Page 21, Section 3, Part C, 1. The statute in Stenberg prohibited, that's 7 years ago, the Nebraska partial birth abortion law that was overturned. They said that Nebraska statute prohibited delivering a living unborn child or a substantial portion thereof. Congress responded to our concerns because the current act departs in material ways from the Nebraska law. It adopts the phrase a living fetus instead of a living unborn child. How about that? This is standing for life, right? This is what National Right to Life applauds as a great victory. This is Focus on the Family's press release of April 19th, 2007. Focus applauds High Court stand for life. The High Court can't stand life. Maybe they just got the wording wrong. The High Court can't stand life. The High Court says, hey, some people don't want to look at a partial birth abortion, so you stupid abortionist, find another way to kill the baby, would you? And we struck down the Nebraska law for a number of reasons. The first reason we're going to indicate is the Nebraska law called it a child, an unborn child. Congress, instead of calling it a child, adopted the phrase a fetus. Even at that level, even at the terminology, you know, of course, they're ruling you could kill the baby, just do it in a different way, so we could get on with our careers. But they don't even tolerate the term child for the baby. And then you have pro-lifers quoting from this ruling, so excited about how the government could use its regulatory power to affirm its commitment for the life within the mother. They get so excited about that. They quote that. It's all over the internet. And what they don't tell you is that's not the finding of the current ruling. That goes back 12 years ago. 15 years ago that goes back. They're quoting themselves from 15 years earlier. And guess what? In 15 years, about 20 million kids were killed by U.S. abortionists. All right, how do we continue? All right, let's go to page 15, section 2. And before I read, any legal process, ruling, or law that violates do not murder is inherently lawless. Many of our pro-life leaders say, oh, these laws, judges have to uphold these abortion laws, because we are a society of laws, not of men. We have to support a law-abiding culture. And guess what? When a judge or a dictator or any government official says you can kill the innocent, that's called lawlessness. That's called lawlessness. That's why we tried German judges. They said they were upholding the law, which was to kill the Jews. And we said that's not a defense. So that's lawlessness. So anyway, this section 2 excerpt I'm going to read implies positively that at least one justice in the future may rule against abortion itself, maybe at least late-term abortion. Okay. But for now, in this ruling, they're violating the ultimate legal principle, which is do not murder. In this ruling, they say, we assume the following principles for the purposes of this opinion. What they mean is they might change this in the future. So at least one of the judges required that was put in there. Before viability, before the baby could survive on its own, outside of the womb, a state may not prohibit any woman from making the ultimate decision to terminate her pregnancy. It also may not impose upon this right an undue burden. Samuel Alito helped to redefine the concept of undue burden a few years ago in one of his rulings. On the other hand, regulations may express profound respect for the life of the unborn. And they're going back to a ruling 12, 15 years ago. When they're saying that, they're quoting this from Casey. All right. Yeah, why didn't they say terminate the fetus? Okay, let's continue. Page 17, Section 3, Part A. The Act's definition of partial birth abortion requires the fetus to be delivered until any part of the fetal trunk past the navel is outside the body of the mother. So you know what that's going to do? That's going to produce gruesome new abortion techniques. So they could pull the baby out. They want the baby out in one piece because it's quicker than if they have to make 10 to 15 passes pulling the baby out. So they could pull the baby out, his feet, ankles, his shins, his knees, his thighs, his hips, his torso, up to, pull out his stomach, up to the umbilical cord, up to where his belly button would be, and then kill him, and then pull him out the rest of the way. Now, it should be pretty easy, right? So this ban, it doesn't have the authority to save a single baby's life, but it does have plenty of opportunity to produce gruesome new abortion techniques. That's what it has. That's the likely outcome. Page 17, Section 3, Part A. For the purposes of criminal liability, the overt act causing the fetus death must be separate from delivery, and the overt act must occur after the delivery to an anatomical landmark. All right? So over and over and over, they say the abortionist can remove the baby up to the navel and then kill him. Page 18, if a living fetus is delivered past the critical point by accident or inadvertence, the act is inapplicable, no crime has occurred. You get that? So as far as an abortion ban that doesn't have the ability, the authority to save even one child's life, right? Let's say that's our goal. We said we're going to pass a ban that doesn't even have the authority to stop one abortion. That's what we're going to do. So I guess you could do that in a good way or a pretty pitiful way. This is actually a pitiful example of an abortion ban that has no authority to save one child, because it doesn't even ban partial birth abortion. It doesn't even ban the textbook case. The abortionist just says, well, I intended to stop at the navel, but the woman was overdilated. They explain that in the ruling, that if a woman is overdilated, the baby might come out quicker than expected, especially if the woman has had one or two of these before, or a live birth or two. If a living fetus is delivered past the critical point, the navel, by accident or inadvertence, no crime has occurred. Great. Page 20. We next determine whether the act imposes an undue burden because of its restrictions on second trimester abortions. The act prohibits only one type of D&E, dilation and extraction, that is intact D&E. It does not prohibit the D&E procedure in which the fetus is removed in parts. This is the High Court standing for life, according to Dr. James Dobson. Page 20, Section 3, Part C, 1. The Act's intent requirement limits its reach to those abortionists, they wrote physicians, to those abortionists who carry out the intact D&E after intending to undertake both steps at the outset. He has to, in other words, he could do an intact D&E, but he has to have determined to pull the baby out beyond the navel before he kills it, and he has to have determined this plan in advance. So if it wasn't his determined plan, then no crime has been committed. So partly, you'd have to believe the abortionist. You'd have our pro-abort Republican judges that are in office all over the land, and you have our pro-abort Republican prosecutors and DAs and mayors and governors who, what, they're going to prosecute an abortionist who says, I never intended to do it, it was an accident. The act, the partial birth abortion ban, excludes D&Es in which the fetus is removed in pieces. All right? It goes on and on. Section 3, Part C, 1. They're concurring with their ruling from Stenberg in 2000 on page 21. The D&E procedure will often involve a physician pulling a substantial portion of a still living fetus, say an arm or leg, into the birth canal prior to the death of the fetus. The removal of such a small portion, such as, say, an arm or a leg, of the fetus is not prohibited. Page 23, the fatal overt act must occur after delivery to an anatomical landmark, that is, the navel. Page 26, now that the court has upheld the partial birth abortion ban, the law will simply be, and I'll quote from them, the law will simply be, quote, requiring doctors to intend dismemberment before delivery to an anatomical landmark past the navel. The act, therefore, cannot be held invalid. You get it? They're saying, hey, we uphold this act because it allows the abortionist to kill the baby pretty much any way he wants to, except for the least painful way. He can't do it that way, but he could do it that way if he didn't intend to do it that way to start with. Page 26. Under the principles accepted as controlling here, by the way, those principles violate do not murder, the act would be unconstitutional if its purpose was to place a substantial obstacle in the path of a woman seeking an abortion. The question is whether the act imposes a substantial obstacle to late-term abortions. The act does not. Under our precedents, it is clear the government has a significant role to play in regulating the medical profession. So this is like regulating dialysis. That's it. Antonin Scalia, hero, pro-life judicial hero of Focus on the Family. He was at a Pew Forum February 4th, 2002, and he was speaking about law and morality. And he said, the only one of my religious views that has anything to do with my job is thou shalt not lie. I will strike down Roe v. Wade, but I will also strike down a law that is the opposite of Roe v. Wade. One side wants no state to prohibit abortion. The other wants every state to prohibit abortion. They're both wrong. That's not pro-life. That's pro-choice. That's pro-choice state by state. If you follow the process, you can kill the baby. That's absolutely devastating. Focus on the Family applauds the High Court stand for life. Salem Radio Network, Hugh Hughes, this is an answer to prayer. National Right to Life applauds the ruling of the High Court. Colorado Right to Life will give you the truth. Judy Brown of American Life League will give you the truth. The Reverend Flip Benham, Operation Save America, will give you the truth. Denver Bible Church will give you the truth. Begin to discern, where do you hear just what you want to hear, and where do you hear the truth? Tonight, Maranatha Christian Center has scheduled an event at Gunther Tootie's in Arvada at 58th and Wadsworth from 4:30 to 9. That should be a lot of fun. What a neat school, Maranatha. And Wednesday, 1:30 at the Capitol, and 7 o'clock, a fundraiser at Maggiano's.
On April 25th, join Colorado Right to Life as they remember the 40th anniversary of the first abortion law ever passed in America by Colorado. Noted speaker Dr. Alan Keyes will give the keynote address at 1:30 at the state capitol. Then join Dr. Keyes, Judy Brown, and Flip Benham at a special dinner Wednesday evening at Maggiano's. Tickets are $100 per person and will sell out. Be a part of this special evening with Dr. Keyes, Wednesday, April 25th. To make your reservations, call 303-753-9394. 303-753-9394.